Thanks.
Good morning. The tax committee will come to order. Welcome, everybody. We're going to have kind of a confusing hearing here today, and I just wanted to tell people what we're planning to do here. We are taking up the governor's bill that he had requested and all leaders had agreed to for him to sign the tax bill. So this is following, finishing up the commitment that got the governor's signature on the tax bill. And so we're going to be getting that cleared and out of the way today with a bill that Representative Broad and I have authored, and we'll be hearing from the governor's representatives. But I wanted to let everyone know that at 10:50, we are going to break for recess for those who wish to watch the inauguration proceeding, which my understanding is at 11 o'clock. So we will go into recess at 10:50. Folks who don't want to watch it, of course, won't. Folks who do want to watch it can walk across the hall, and it's open to the public, anyone, to room 5. And you can watch the inauguration. We anticipate it to be done about 11:30. We don't know that, but then we'll just come back in the room and keep going with tax committee, and we'll adjourn at our regular time whether we get our work done or not. So we will be adjourning at 12:15. But we hope to work through this bill this morning, noting that we're going to recess in about 15 minutes. So you can go wherever you want to at that time, but please try to come back. Whether you're watching or not, try to ask people if Obama's done speaking, and that'll tell you we're going to be back in at that time. So with that, we're going to take up House Bill 95. However, I've just been reminded, could I get a motion to approve the minutes of January 12th and January 13th?
So moved.
Representative Reiner moves the minutes of January 12th and January 13th. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and move House Bill 95 to get it before us. I do want to thank Representative Broad for co-authoring this legislation with me. And this language was drafted by the governor's office, and so we've asked them to be with us to talk to us about the bill today. And if we'll be hearing from Ms. Cadoon. But I think what we want to do just to make it simple is first kind of walk through the process that got us to this bill, and then I'll ask Mr. Michael and Ms. Manzi to actually describe the mechanics of the bill, and then we'll hear from Ms. Cadoon. So in your packet, and that's probably the best way to follow this issue, is to look at all the letters that are in the packet. And you can see in the packet, well, there's also the revenue estimates that show the bill doesn't cost money. But basically, we have a letter from Commissioner Hansen telling the county commissioner that to get the tax bill signed, this provision was agreed to, that there was agreement by Senator Pogemiller, Representative Kelleher, the governor, myself, Senator Bach, and the health committee chairs, to remove two provisions, the maintenance of effort being one, and that was sent to the county commissioners, and then the health care credit. Then there's another letter that's signed by Senator Pogemiller, Representative Kelleher, Speaker Kelleher, myself, and Senator Bach, agreeing to our intent on May 27th to bring this bill forward immediately at the beginning of the 09 session, as the governor had requested. And then, of course, there's the letter from the governor. And you can read the governor's letter of May 27th to Senator Pogemiller, Senator Bach, myself, and the speaker, laying out that he is signing the tax bill with the agreement that this bill will be brought up and passed upon coming into the 2009 session. So that sort of lays the groundwork for what we're doing here today. So with that, if I don't know if Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi wants to go first and just tell us actually what's in the bill. They don't want to. and you know, I'm laughing. I said, honestly, I think people who are part of the tax committee, we have a lot of new members here, members who are both freshmen and don't even know what this is all about, and members who do not sit on the tax committee at all. But, you know, I just have to sort of editorialize, and everybody has their different vantage point about what happened. And, you know, my view is it was everyone's fault. Everyone's fault. So this was an error that took place, and we're now trying to correct it. The House was not a fan of these provisions. There's no secret about that. These are the way the governor and some in the Senate wanted them. And this was an agreement to get the tax bill signed because there was some confusion about how these things should be drafted. I should tell you that in preparation for the committee hearing today, it occurred to me at about 10 o'clock last night that, oh my goodness, there's an inauguration, and we'll be in Texas. So I went back and looked to see what did the Republicans do when President Bush took office on January 20th, 2001, and I wanted to see kind of what was the practice. And in fact, it was a Saturday, so I thought, you know, didn't have to deal with it. So then I listened to the 2005 January 20th second term inauguration tape of the PAC committee, which was meeting not during the inauguration, but after. And interestingly, it was new tax chair Representative Krinke hearing the first bill, Representative Abrams, former tax chair's bill, to correct an error in the previous omnibus tax bill. First bill out of the suit, and it was all about the LGA formula, and got to Representative Rukavina and Representative Mullery and others debate, you know, what was Ely going to get, and Representative Dill. So I thought it was just kind of a strange coincidence that on that inaugural day, that tax chair was bringing forward a bill to correct an error in the previous tax bill. So, Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, I'll talk briefly about the credit that's being proposed in House Bill 95 and the credits that are being supposed to be repealed in House Bill 95, and then you may want to ask Ms. Dalton to talk about the maintenance of effort provision. House Bill 95 would enact a new health insurance premiums credit that would go to individuals. It would be a non-refundable credit equal to 20% of premiums paid through participation in a employer-sponsored Section 125 health plan. It would only be available during the first 12 months that the individual participated in the Section 125 plan, and it would be limited to individuals who had not had coverage under any health plan for at least 1 year. It would further be limited based on the individual's income, with the income eligibility requirements tied to the federal poverty guidelines. If you look on the back page of the House Research Bill Summary, there's a little table that shows you for different filer types what income ranges would be eligible. So for a single person with no dependents, in order to claim this credit, they would have to have income between just over $20,000 and right around $29,000. So it's a fairly narrow income range for the different filer types. These income ranges that are in the bill summary are based on the 2008 Federal Poverty Guidelines. The Federal Department of Health and Human Services has not yet released the 2009 Poverty Guidelines. Those should be out in the next few weeks. So these numbers will move, I assume, up a little bit for tax year 2009, and then they would be adjusted each year into the future that the credit was available. So that's the new credit that's being proposed in the bill. That credit was proposed toward the end of last session, and after discussions among the tax conferees and various administration staff, the tax committee replaced it with a two-part employer credit during conference committee. The rationale for replacing this individual credit with a two-part employer credit was the assumption that the intent of the credit was to induce more people to have health care coverage. And since the revenue estimate had indicated that there were very few employers offering these Section 125 plans for health insurance only, that it would make more sense at the outset to do something through the tax code to encourage employers to offer the plans, and then people would be able to move into them. So the credit that's being repealed had two parts. One part was a credit that would go to employers who hadn't previously offered the plans for establishing the plan, and another part would go to employers for increasing participation in the plans. So that's what's in the repealer for the health care credit. And that's all I'm going to say about that, unless someone has some questions.
Madam Chair, Ms. Manzi, just to make sure, I think this only applies where the employer is involved with this type of plan, doesn't it? If I'm an employee for somebody that isn't an employer that's not going to participate, or if I'm self-employed or something, I still don't get any help on my insurance, do I?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, that's correct. In order for an individual to claim this credit, the employer has to offer the Section 125 plan, and the individual has to participate in it.
Representative
Mullery. We have to go along with this anyhow since it's an agreement, but I would hope that as we go through the session, we look at the unfairness of this whole thing. I've been trying for years to get some individuals protected and where the employer is not participating, and I don't know how this happened to go through, but again, it's just more that more discrimination without any basis, I think. But we'll have to look at that later.
And Representative Mullery, I know that Representative Loeffler sent me an email this morning, and I think a lot of people understand that, you know, the healthcare community should not try to write tax credits. And it is, and I guess this is a good opportunity for all members to back up the purview of the tax committee repeatedly. When other chairs, and this happens in both parties and over time, attempt to write tax policy, and you always hear the tax committee and the previous two chairs I served under insisting those bills be done in tax committee, this was a problem because we had in the Senate and with the governor an attempt to write health tax policy in the tax committee. And there was a big confusion. The taxpayers and the two bodies said, you know, well, we'll carry it, but we're going to write it. And I guess that was where the big misunderstanding happened. And I think this example shows that what the two tax committees did was a better product, but is now getting repealed. So, I mean, I am intending in May and in April when we're doing the omnibus tax bill that we're going to revisit this because this is, I think, it's clear that it's going to go, you know, going to the way it was agreed in the letter will cover less people, and it's probably not a better way to do it. But, you know, we try hard in this committee not to write health care policy, and we hope that those committees will try not to write tax policy. But I think we're all stuck at the moment, and I think the points you raise are right on the mark, and we need to be insistent upon the purview of this committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think actually it goes to the process in general. When you talk about things getting tucked in a bill late or not getting tucked in a bill and this committee writing something versus the other one, I think it goes to a reform that we probably need to do, which is getting these bills, these omnibus bills, done earlier than one of the last nights of session. And so I hope as Chair Pawlowski looks at reforms, that that's something that he'll look at because I think it improves the process for everybody. This is a step in the right direction in terms of tax credits for health care. Is it perfect? Probably not. Can it be expanded? Absolutely. But it's up for, you know, it's a step in the right direction. But I think the process is broken in general.
Representative, I agree with you. Time management is the reason that we're here doing this now. I mean, at the end, it's all about time management. And Representative Pawlowski has got a lot of great ideas. I am one who actually agrees with those bipartisanly who thinks some of this bill should have to be laid on the desk for 24 hours. And I hope we'll look at that rule bipartisanly, because it allows staff to sleep and look and think and find things while we all go home and take a shower. So I agree. I think there is a lot of blame that can be passed between everyone, and it's kind of, as I stated in the beginning, it's kind of everyone's fault, but it is an issue of time management, and I think this is an unfortunate example, but needs to be done to, you know, I think the tax bill had 128 yes votes, and for those who voted yes, this provision, these two provisions today need to be passed. They really are what the governor insisted upon to sign the tax bill that brought LGA and brought county aid and all the things people wanted to see happen and veterans pension issues and all those things. So, Representative Broad, I couldn't agree with you more. Further questions? Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, there was a lot of, sometimes I think, you know, and I agree with you that the taxpayers have to have a handle and should be writing tax law, but there's a lot of times I feel the tax conference committee shouldn't be writing tax laws. So, you know, when I see this coming this early, I guess I question if everything's done in that, and I realize that, you know, a decision has to be made on whether or not we're going to lay this bill on the counties or lay the bill on the state of Minnesota. But I don't know why it's got to be made this quickly. And I didn't make any promises to the governor, and I wasn't on the tax committee. In fact, I voted for a lot of things in that bill I didn't like. But you have to do it. So, you know, you're going to be negotiating with the governor for the next 5 months, and I'm sure the governor's going to want to do a lot of things that you and I don't agree with. To give him something this early, I don't know, you can't make promises to all of us, Madam Chair. So I don't think I'm supporting this bill today because I don't think this train has to move this fast. I've got questions on how much, you know, according to the governor's own letter, or, you know, this could be $100 million over the next biennium on counties. So, and you're forcing them to pick it up, from my understanding, with this bill, right?
Representative Rugamina, yes.
And so, well, Madam Chair, thank you. And I'd like the short answer. So, you know, that's the question, because I know we're going to be sitting here for 5 months, and we're going to be throwing stuff at counties and cities and townships and school districts to make them increase the property taxes. And you know, I want to play poker with you tonight. We'll celebrate out in Washington, and then we'll play poker
and
win some money.
And Representative Rukavina, I think we should. I want maybe a little more information. A conference call that had all the leaders agree to this provision, and you're right, you know, no one can make a decision for someone else, and that's why everyone gets to vote. On the other hand, we elect the leaders of the four caucuses who were all on that conference call to make a determination when told the tax bill would instead be vetoed. So I think there were about 30 people on that conference call. Much of the staff was on that call. And it was a very interesting call, but it was what was agreed to by everyone. And that's, you know, what we're looking at going forward. You mentioned the county issue, and we'll get into that after the break. I completely agree with you, and I asked the governor's representatives in the department to request from the governor, does he still really want this? Because the maintenance of effort stuff, you're exactly right, cost them money. The answer was yes. I mean, it's still about honoring the agreement going backward. I think had the governor come forward and said, you know, we don't care about this bill anymore, you don't need to change the health care credit, you don't need to change the MOE thing, we would just drop it. But I think it's more about, you know, it's important in my mind that all leaders and all legislators who are involved honor the commitment they said to one another so we don't get off to a bad foot this session. And I think we've got four caucuses and the governor, the caucus leaders agreed to this. And I think it shows the upside of maybe not the best policy. The upside is it shows that we are going to start working together in 09. We're going to honor our previous commitments, get past that. But as I've expressed to the counties in the room this morning before the committee started, my intent is to review all of this maintenance of effort stuff. I think what the counties in general are looking for in their new redesign proposal is excellent. And I hope that everybody who's got county governance viewpoints would get involved in that debate, because the governor highlighted it in the State of the State. He actually gave credit to the counties for their forward thinking in this area. And I think we're going to have to redo the whole thing in the tax committee. But we're not going to get it done today. It's, you know, what do we need to do to get that tax bill signed? And it's just following that through. It may be that both of these provisions are repealed in a later tax bill.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative
and members. You know, yeah, if you do them today, then you're going to have to fight to repeal them later. You can talk about bipartisanship all you want, but we have, I didn't hear anything in the State of the State about bipartisanship. Anybody that thinks that we're going to get out of this session without raising some revenue is living in a dream world. Nobody, if anybody wants to take me on that issue at this table, everybody with an election certificate, let's go. Because there's no way we're getting out of this without raising revenue. The question is, who are you going to raise the revenue on? Now we're seeing $100 million being raised on the poor property owners, and we're going to see some more raised on it. Now, there's a lot of things maybe in this maintenance effort I don't like. I don't like the state throwing people in jail and then letting them out early and then throwing them at the county jail in St. Louis County, because I have to pay for that on my property taxes. And all of that stuff isn't being negotiated in a big picture with this passage of this little bill that's throwing $100 million right off the bat at the property taxpayers. So, Madam Chair, you know, leadership's out in Washington right now. So, you know, I mean, we're here at home doing the business, and I don't like the business we're doing right off the bat. That's what I'm saying. Everybody else can do what they want. But, Madam Chair, I disagree with you about
I didn't hear anything the other day that indicated there's going to be some huggy, kissy-feely type thing going on here this session about solving our budget crisis, which is the most terrible one anybody sitting at this table has ever seen. And I'm not willing to throw $100 million right out the window at some of my constituents and neighbors and friends who live on nothing but a Social Security check a month and have them pay in this fairness debate that we're going to have this session. So, you know, I hear you on the radio talking about sales tax on clothing. Come to embarrass when it's 40 below, Madam Chair, and go outside without clothes on. So there's going to be a lot of things on the table this year that I don't like, and this is one of them, so I don't want to toss my cards down already. Other people can do what they want with it. Yeah. I'm going to go watch the Obama. Maybe he'll say the same thing I did, and I'll get more votes before we come back. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Bergevin. He gets the amount of deficit, though we don't. So, and members, I think we are going to recess now. I am not proposing a sales tax on clothing. I don't know where you got that, but...
I thought I heard you talk about it on the radio that we got to look at everything.
So we do. Representative Davis is going to be next when we come back. We're 5 minutes past. We're gonna recess and come back and pick up with Representative Davis for an exciting year in tax committee. With that, we are in recess. Okay, we're back, and thank you, everybody. And Ms. Manzi and Ms. Daldner ready to tell us more, but first we have Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just a couple of thoughts or a couple of comments. I'm hearing about this agreement of leadership, that leadership's agreed to things. I don't see my name or Representative Rubina's name on any of these agreements. I'm all for honoring agreements. I really am. I think we should honor agreements that I make, not that you make. Then I see here letters that are telling us, one from finance and one from the governor, one with everybody signing, saying, oh, by the way, don't obey the law. I mean, you leave for 2 years, and now we get letters saying don't obey the law. It's from finance. It says, oh, by the way, this is a law, but don't obey it. I'll have an amendment after we've heard the testimony coming up that I believe will be the Peace in the Valley Amendment and will solve all the problems. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davis. I guess I'm just trying to think here. Before we jump off into the maintenance of efforts, sorry, Ms. Dalton, maybe Ms. Cadoon wants to join us from the Governor's office, or with the Department of Revenue, on behalf of the Governor, and anyone who may be here from the Governor's office. You know, if you want to provide any insights, certainly Representative Davis is really right. He wasn't even here last year. So he's really not, you know, in on any of this. And I think, honestly, members who were not a member of the legislature last year, you know, I can see them just thinking, you know, I don't want to vote for this today. I understand that. But for those who were, we do, again, I just want to repeat, that we do allow these four caucuses, their leaders that we elect, to negotiate on our behalf. And everybody here today certainly can vote no. That's their prerogative. There's no insinuation that anybody should vote anyway other than what they believe in. But I do, you know, I think maybe, you know, I want to give the governor, who's, you know, not here at this moment, but one of his representatives, a chance to defend these letters that said don't obey the law, because it was Commissioner Hanson's letter and the governor's letter, and I should note, as Representative Rukavina stated, the maintenance of effort issue could be up to $100 million. That money, it would not be new here today. That was built into the forecast. So there would not be another $100 million in new spending due to the passage of this bill. Believe me, the Chair of Ways and Means would not allow that to happen and leave this room. It's a zero item on the bill. So it was built into the forecast, and the counties have already levied for that money. So that is gone and done. But if you want to, Ms. Cadoon, speak to, you know, Commissioner Hanson and the governor, you know, giving instructions to the local units of government to conduct themselves with the assumption that this bill was going to pass. Ms. Cadoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name, for the record, is Beth Cadoon, and I'm with the Department of Revenue. Just as the Chair had earlier stated, and I think this is very accurate, the reason we're moving forward today is that it's really about honoring a commitment that was made after the legislature adjourned dealing with the omnibus tax bill. And the concern was related to two items that are before you now, which is the maintenance of effort provision and a provision dealing with the Section 125 health care credit. And it really related to two items that, as the bill was put together, and you talked about the process a little bit, that it wasn't really discovered or really understood the ramifications until after the legislature adjourned regarding these provisions in the omnibus tax bill. There was definitely concern related to those and the potential implications, especially with the maintenance of effort to the state budget and programs, on what that meant. And I think there was an agreement by the leaders that's stated in the letter with the governor as well, is that the concern that if those two provisions weren't, that they needed to be dealt with in order to get the omnibus tax bill signed. And so the agreement was to have those provisions, two provisions dealt with early in session in order to get the omnibus tax bill signed. And I think that was certainly a priority of a lot of individuals because there were many good items in the omnibus tax bill, and certainly nobody wanted to see that fail at that point. I don't know if you want me to address any certain provision. One thing mentioned to the not obeying law issue, and I don't know if anybody's here from the Department of Finance wants to deal with that directly. I think the item wasn't necessarily not to obey the law. It was more with that to let the counties know that this provision with the maintenance of effort, that to let them know that there's an agreement to make that to repeal this provision. And so if they move forward with not abiding by the maintenance of effort, that it would be kind of at their peril, because knowing that they were going to have efforts to undo that provision early in session. And I think it was more to let them be aware of that situation, so nobody undertook their budget not knowing that that would likely be repealed.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Kadoon? Further questions? Okay, if there are none, then we'll go back to, are we on to Ms. Dalton here? Yes, Ms. Dalton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and I'm going to talk about the very the one last sentence of the bill that we haven't talked about, and that's in Section 2, Clause B, from line 10 of page 2, and that is just repealing Section 275.76. And that was the language that basically said local governments did not have to meet any of the maintenance of effort requirements for a number of programs, or for any county program, while levy limits were in effect. And that impacts libraries, public safety, a whole slew of health and human services issues, so this totally repeals that retroactively. And as has been mentioned before, counties were informed about the intention to repeal this, and counties, we assume, set their budgets accordingly. Budgets are already budgets and property taxes are already set for pay 2009, so this doesn't impact their property taxes, at least for this coming year. It probably doesn't impact their taxes in the future either, because this has nothing to do with whether levy limits are in effect or not. Levy limits will continue to be in effect and will be the controlling thing on what they can levy for property taxes. The main issue is that there are a number of maintenance of effort programs that are not just state mandated, but they are federally mandated. And if the counties choose not to make the payments, the state will be on the hook. That $100 million is not an increase in property taxes, it's a potential increase in state costs.
Yeah. Further questions? Rep. Coles and Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dalton, the repealer language that was put into the omnibus tax bill at the end of last session, there's some information that that language came from a lobbyist and was represented as being consistent with prior legislative acts relating to levy limits. I'm reading that from the governor's letter. I don't know what happened or didn't happen and who said what or didn't say what, but can you tell us, is this language that was put into the 2008 omnibus tax bill consistent with prior levy limit bills?
Madam Chair, We've never had a maintenance of effort provision in a levy limit bill, so this was kind of a new thing for us to see, and this was really kind of outside of our purview, which is why I think part of the error occurred. We had the wrong staff looking at it. There have been times in the past during budget crises when the state has chosen to change maintenance of effort requirements. There was a time in the past where levy, the maintenance of effort for libraries was reduced. And I think there have been times when some of the maintenance of effort in other programs have been frozen. I'm not aware of any instance in the past where maintenance of effort requirements have been totally repealed or a provision made to have been totally ignored.
Madam Chair, Ms. Dalton, maybe a slightly unfair question to you, but is it fair to say then if that representation was made, that was a misrepresentation, what's referred to in the governor's letter? I'm not asking you to say that it was made, but if it was made, that would be a misrepresentation based on what you just said. Is that correct?
Ms. Dalton, you don't have to answer that. You know, and I think Representative Coles mentioned that in his opening comment there. I think Representative Coles is alluding to the fact that it's sort of difficult for staff to sort of leave.
Madam Chair, I'm not trying to put Ms. Dalton on the spot.
No, and that's
not
saying Representative Coles. I know you wouldn't do that.
But, I mean, there's a... If that representation was made, it seems incredibly inconsistent with what Ms. Dalton just told us has happened in the past. I wasn't there. I don't know if it was. I wasn't a part of the conference call that apparently you and 30 others were. I didn't get the invite. I don't think Representative Rodavina got it either. So I'm not sure what happened or didn't happen, but I guess if the governor's going to put something in paper, I'm going to at least... there's some pretty strong evidence there that's what he heard or understood. I'll leave it at that, Madam Chair.
I'll comment on that. And I meant that sincerely. You know, Representative Coles, that I know you enough to know you would not try to, and none of us would ever try to make the staff try to, you know, figure out what we're all doing, because we don't always even know. But, you know, I do think there has been a lot of confusion and a lot of blame passed around on this, and honestly, you know, I think back to what was happening in the middle of the night that night in public and with the conference committee tape running, and we were actually having staff help remind us what motions to make because it was so grueling and exhausting, and that was after the governor's office work had been closed up then, and then we brought things back to the conference room on camera, we're voting everything, and it was very difficult. I think everybody involved, whether it was the lobbying community, the legislators in both parties, the governors, were exhausted, and I think Representative Broad highlighted that earlier, that there is a problem as far as time management, which I agree. I can tell you the next day, I know AFSCME is here, Mr. Forreston, he was on the phone to me, I don't know if he had time to go home and shower, but he was on the phone to me immediately, as was staff and people from the county, and people were all kind of figuring out that there was this issue. So, you know, I don't know if you asked me to tell the story or Senator Bach or any member of the conference committee or the governor or the commissioner, Commissioner Irons, I think everybody has a different story because we were all pretty fried by the end there. And I think that it's just not particularly productive to point fingers at somebody here or there anyway. I think everybody's now trying to honor the agreement that was, that the governor asked for to sign the tax bill. And that, you know, that's really all I can say to it. I mean, we could have one person after another come up and tell us what they think happened that night. But we're here now. The tax bill was signed so that people could receive all the things they received in the tax bill, and there was confusion on these two pieces. So, you know, I don't really know who to direct the question to either, Representative Coles, but if you have a thought, I mean, we can bring them forward.
No, Madam Chair, I'll be done. Other than to say, I wanted to governor's letter about the validity of the statement that by whomever, if anybody did make, and I don't even know who the lobbyist is that's referred to in the letter. I wasn't a part of it. I don't know, but if there were misrepresentations made, I wanted to know if the governor is accurately portraying it as well. So I appreciate your clarification. I appreciate Ms. Dalton's testimony and work as well.
Thank you, Representative Coles. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Dalton will be very happy that I'm not an attorney. So I won't ask you those questions, but actually, I'm not sure if you can actually create this list for me or not right now, but maybe somebody in house research from a variety of different areas. What I'm trying to figure out is within the MOEs, within the maintenance of efforts, there are some things that are federally required that create the budget hole, essentially. And there's some things that are not federally required, and I'm wondering if you can get me a list of those which are required and those which are not. I mean, for example, libraries, I believe we repealed that MOE in 2004 or 5, maybe even earlier, and then it got put back into place. And so I'm trying to figure out, is there a way to find common ground or a middle ground on it to leave the ones that create the budget hole and to pull the others out as a commitment to reducing mandates to the counties?
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, actually, at the request of DPR, I am currently working on that list with particularly our Health and Human Service people.
And Ms. Broad, Representative Broad, you know, we're happy that when she's done, we'll share with everyone. I know Representative Dietrich talked to me in the break as well, you know, to get more assurance that this whole maintenance of effort thing will be worked on this session with the counties, and they are all here. And I, you know, it is my commitment to you that we will be doing all that, and we need everybody to work on this bipartisanly. Whether they can vote for it in the end or not is a separate question. But we need everyone's mind. I've talked to Representative Loeffler, who's got a lot of experience on counties. I heard Tom Anzelt was a county commissioner. I know Larry Hodge was. If anybody, if ever a county commissioner can help us, tax committee is going to do a lot of county stuff this year, and we need a lot of help. I listened to Mr. Mulder make his presentation on the county redesign initiative they're bringing forward that the governor referenced to the Hennepin County Board on TV in the wee hours of the morning one night in the replay, and watched him do the presentation. And it's real. I know I'm sick. I know, and he's told me a little bit with some of the county leaders who are here. I've met with him, and I know many of you are as well. But it's excellent stuff, and they've got a lot of ideas in so many areas that will affect every committee here. So this committee's got to get their heads around exactly what Representative Broad is now asking, which is there are so many of them. They're sprinkled throughout Health and Human and all kinds of other areas. Some have federal impact, some don't. And we're going to have to figure out how to manage this to get out of this deficit. Representative Broad.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just remind the committee and the members who were here last year that we did have an opportunity on the House floor through an amendment to get rid of mandates and to set up a process where local governments have a place at the table. And I'm hoping with this renewed energy around mandate relief that we can start really not just talking about it, but actually doing it.
Thank you. Further questions, Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to kind of make a comment here, and I appreciate the position that the chair is in here. I really do, and this is a really difficult problem. But I have to say that I'm a little bit troubled by the idea that we elect leadership and then leadership negotiates for us and makes agreements and binds us to future votes. I don't view it that way, Madam Chair. And I think that our allegiance to leadership, although certainly we elect our leadership, but it's we follow as volunteers, I think. And I'm also troubled I agree with what Representative Rukavina was saying before. I think that we come here to represent our districts. To the degree that we can, we understand that we're not individuals in this process. We have to work together to get things done. And I think bipartisanly, to greater or lesser degrees, at different times we try to do that. But I do not feel that I can support this bill, and I was troubled when I saw the letter that said that there was an agreement to repeal it, because I didn't make that agreement, and so I think there's a principle at stake here. We saw when we had the vote last term on the transportation bill that 6 Republicans voted against their leadership. And we saw that the public we saw the reaction to that. The public expects us as elected representatives to vote our districts and to vote our consciences. And so I just wanted to make that statement. I'm troubled by this process. I'm troubled by what happened at the end of last session, that we were voting on things so late and without enough opportunity to really review it. I'm troubled by the whole process of a few leaders going behind closed doors and making agreements to which nobody else is party, and I just wanted to make that statement. That's why I can't support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Rukavina.
Sure. You know, again, and I I understand the predicament you're in. I know what goes on in the middle of the night and everything else around here, but you know, I just want members to remember that we're going to have to do some more cutting even in this biennium. And I don't know where those cuts are going to come from. And, you know, I just don't want to see a tax system that's gotten progressively less progressive over the last few years get even more so. And so I think that this does this. You know, you can't have $100 million or maybe more thrown at obligations that other people have to pick up and have no wherewithal other than, I think, property taxes to raise that money. But, you know, without giving some kind of compromise, getting some kind of compromise. And, you know, there are a lot of things we can negotiate that should be cut. Mandates that don't have to be met, Representative Broad. You know, for all the attorneys on the committee, I know where I'd cut. I'm cutting the criminal justice system and all the you know, the favors we've done around here for that whole cottage industry, as I call it, that hasn't been cut like the rest of the state government and local government has been cut since our crisis in 2003. Those are the kind of things I'd look at, but this gives me no wiggle room to do this early, to use this as a bargaining chip to do things like that. So, no offense, Madam Chair, but, you know, I know, you know, you'll probably reprimand me later, but as I've said in many committees, I like strong women pushing at me, so I, you know, I'll handle that okay, and I hope that some of my colleagues think about this long and hard before we let this bill move out of here. Maybe we should let it sit and simmer for a little while.
Thank you, Representative Rugby. And we may have to because we have a lot of public testimony, and I don't think we'll get it through done today, but, you know, Representative Davis and Rukavina and Liebling are all really saying the same thing, and they're right. I mean, everyone should vote their conscience. I mean, that's what should happen, and people, and that's what I encourage every member to do on this and every other bill. At the same time, I just want to remind everyone that this will probably be one of the easiest votes you will take in the committee this year, and I just want to be clear for everybody that, where we're going and how we're going to get there is unclear, but I think everyone knows it's going to be really rough. And, you know, I have decided, while I said I don't like either one of these changes, I don't agree with them. For me, it's about honoring commitment and starting the session out in a way that allows what happened last year to get past that so we can move forward. And I think Representative Rukavina is right. We're going to cut yet in this biennium, after the February forecast. So we've got a long road ahead of us. Representative Davids and then Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, Mike, I've got a question for Mr. Michael. I think there are some precedents in what we're doing here. Earlier this decade, I believe there was an issue with local government aides where something was flipped around, and I remember meeting in the governor's office, and a whole bunch of us got together and said, the law is the law, but we don't want to go by it, and we're going to change it next time. Could you refresh me a little bit on that, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Michael.
Ms. Dalton?
Ms. Dalton.
Ms. Dalton, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative David, that's actually correct. There was a, I hate to admit this because this was also in my area, there was an error in some language in the local government aid that would have done a fairly substantial reshifting of where all the money went. The city disagreed with what happened. The legislature agreed that this had not been their intent. Everybody agreed. All the interested parties agreed that it had not been the intent. And so the Department of Revenue did actually, leadership again, wrote a letter to the governor and to the Commissioner of Revenue saying, clearly, we all did not mean to do this. This was clearly an error in drafting the language. And the Department of Revenue administered the law as if the change had not occurred. And that was the agreement that everybody had. And then right again at the beginning of the session, there was a retroactive repeal to make the law match the way they had actually certified the money. Not sent out the money, because the money wasn't sent out until July. But they made it comparable to what they had certified back in September as what people would get in the coming year.
And Madam Chair, I don't really remember why I was even involved in that at that time. I wasn't one of the gang of how many, I don't think, but I remember being involved in that. And what it did is it shifted. You had winners and losers, and in the district I represent, I had winners and losers, and I just switched my winners and losers, is what we did.
And Representative Davis, I believe that is the bill I was referencing at the beginning of committee that took place on Inauguration Day on January 20th, 2005, carried by Abrams through the Krenke Committee to fix a 2004 omnibus tax bill problem in the LGA formula. And members who may not know Representative Davis as well as I do, and some of the people have been here, mm-hmm. Representative Davis used to be on the tax committee, so he may be new this year, but he knows a lot about taxes, and we're glad he's here. But I think it might have been the 2004 omnibus tax bill mm-hmm. sort of glitch again that everybody missed. And in that time, it was in the LGA formula, and Representative Rukavina didn't hear me, I don't think so, but I got to listen to him sort of quiz Representative Abrams on how much money Dill was going to lose and why, and then Representative Mullery got in on that, and that was all kind of the first, with Inauguration Day 05, as Representative Abrams attempted to correct an error on the tax bill. Representative Rukavina.
Just to remind Representative Davis, and he shifted his winners and losers, and then he lost the next leg.
Representative Davis left it the way it was.
Just a reminder.
Madam Chair, who were the signatures on that particular letter?
You know, I bet staff could sign that. Ms. Dalton, you recall?
Madam Chair, it would have been the chairs of the tax committee at that time, so it would have been Senator Pogemiller, I believe, and Representative Abrams.
Just two?
I believe so. I don't think that one actually went to the level where the governor and the speaker and the majority leader signed the letter.
It would have been Swigum and who?
And
Roger Moll? Dean Johnson. Okay. And Governor Ventura?
No.
04?
No.
04?
His Honor, yeah, 02.
Oh, that's right. Okay. That's right. Interesting. Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. For those of us who are uncomfortable with this situation, I think it's important to remember there is precedent for this kind of action to take place, and it's happened before, has been noted. You know, I wasn't a party to this agreement either, and I can certainly understand and appreciate the folks who are uncomfortable with simply following what the leadership has asked us to do, and you have that prerogative to say no to that. But I think before we end this discussion, we better ask ourselves and ask the staff, what are the consequences of not doing this? I mean, I think there are more consequences at stake here than just simply going against our leadership. And I would like to see that explored if folks are, in fact, very uncomfortable with trying to stand behind an agreement with the leadership. I think there are very serious implications of not doing this at this point.
Thank you for pointing that out. Ms. Dalton, do you want to opine what the consequences would be?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I had to opine, what I will say is that staff is under a lot of pressure at the end of session. We do not catch every mistake. There have been a number of letters in my 22 years now here in the tax committee. Most of them have not risen to the level of acknowledgement that this issue clearly has. But there have been a number of mistakes that have been made in the tax bill over the year because of the process. And, you know, we talked about the LGA one. That was, again, a fairly significant one. But there have been a number of minor ones over the years that we have written letters to the Commissioner of Revenue that have been signed by the tax chairs. And then they have often been corrected, not as a separate bill, but have been corrected in the Department of Revenue policy bills, with, again, retroactive effective dates.
Representative Lanning, do you have a suggestion maybe going forward how we could answer your question better? Is there, you know, I guess I'm just trying to think of how we can get, you know, a better answer to your question going forward.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As an example, the counties followed the advice they got from the state with regard to how they should handle this. Now, if we don't have this fixed, what are the implications for county governments and what they've already done following the previous advice they got from state officials? It would seem to me that that people could, a lot of folks could come after the state as a result of decisions they made following what they heard from leadership. And I think there are obviously legal implications that we might be facing if we don't do this.
Thank you, Representative Rubidino.
So, Lanning's got a good point, and maybe what we should look at, because you're not going to be voting on this today, right?
I think we won't get through public testimony, right?
And so maybe, you know, Maury, what we can do is look at what we have to meet federally and what that law could be, but also what's mandated on a state level and whether or not there's some wiggle room to not do all of that stuff and perhaps even expand it to what are the consequences. I don't know if you can do a run county by county of what it's going to mean on property taxes, or maybe it won't have any effect on certain mandates. So maybe we could see all of that by the end of the week, Madam Chair.
You know, and I don't know, Representative Roosevelt, you're right. So is Representative Lanning. We all have to figure this out. And I have not yet secured this for sure, but I've talked to Representative Huntley about having a joint meeting. I mean, a lot of this MOE stuff is in Health and Human Services, and we all are going to have to tackle this. And I think the way you've just stated it is exactly right. What is the federal chunk? Where do they need lifting? Where do they need flexibility? I mean, we know the local units of government always get hammered when there's a deficit. And how can we help them not take it as bad as usual? And that's, I think, what no one knows the answer to yet.
You know, Madam Chair, as an example, and on the way down today, I heard that White Bear Lake, they were interviewing people in White Bear Lake, one of the oldest suburbs, they said. And I think I heard they had a city-owned nursing home, as I do. Now, there's a lot of federal mandates on that, as an example. And so if the maintenance of effort or whatever they require isn't met, does Virginia, Minnesota lose $1 million in nursing home reimbursements, but only $300,000 in LGA or whatever, you know, through the county? I don't know that. It would be more related to the county. But maybe those are the kind of things we can look at and have an expanded horizon here this morning.
Ms. Dalton, and then Representative Loeffler, and then we're going to adjourn. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, I do think it's important to be really clear that if you ask me for a run of what does this mean for property taxes, I can give you that run right now. It means nothing for property taxes right now because the levy limits are in effect whether you repeal this or not. It does have an impact on local government's flexibilities and how they spend their money, but it does not give them an increased or decreased authority to levy property taxes.
Madam,
however,
Representative Roosevelt, at that point, yes.
You know, does it mean that there's no wiggle room at a certain level of local government where 20 people are going to get laid off in a local nursing home?
Madam Chair, Representative Roosevelt, you are correct.
Because I don't think my nursing home, where my mother was just in until last June when she died, can afford any more people lost there because of what's happened over the last several years. So is that what it means? Maybe it doesn't mean an actual property tax increase, but if it means cutting 20 people where they can't cut.
Ms. Dalton?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Rubina, you're right. It gives them limited flexibility in which programs they can cut, because they won't be able to, if you repeal this, they won't be able to cut some of the Health and Human Service costs that are mandated, that there's a mandated effort, which means that they will have to cut some other parts of their budget that there are no maintenance of effort requirements on. However, Ms. Hill has some information regarding what the Department of Finance Management, whatever it's called now,
MMB,
is going to do.
Okay,
if you don't want it.
Madam Chair, committee members, just so you know, included in the November forecast, they've addressed this issue in the sense that they've assumed that the repeal would take place. Listen to, and I'll read you two sentences only on the caption that is in here. If counties choose to discontinue their former contributions toward entitlement services, the services must continue to be provided by the state, a potential general fund cost of about $200 million for FY09 through 11, that's fiscals 10 and 11. In addition, the language would also allow counties to reduce up to $300 million in other local services during the same time period that would not have a direct general fund impact. So that kind of gives you the idea of what counties are facing if this agreement does not go through, because the February forecast, if this portion is not repealed, the February forecast will include these provisions, and the deficit will be bigger than what we've already projected.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. Clear. Representative Fulber.
And do we have the breakdown? I can't remember for sure in that document of how much of that is in fiscal 09, $200 million only in the next biennium.
I don't
Some of it would be in this biennium as well.
Madam Chair and Representative Silver, I don't have that right here, but I believe that it is in the forecast as well, and so we can get that information.
At that point, I misspoke then because I didn't read the full statement here. The governor's, it's $100 million this biennium, meaning until June 30th in 6 months.
Exactly.
So it could be well over 200,
right.
Over the $200
million.
That's
right.
That's
right.
So now we're looking at...
The total impact is the $300 million, the rough figures. Right. With those type of things, $100 million this year, that would take additional cuts, and that's again rough figures.
Thank you, Representative Wofford. Can you wait till the next time? We'll start with you. Okay, thank you, members. We're adjourned.